You are listening to Lighthearted, the official podcast of the United States Lighthouse Society. My name is Jeremy D'Entremont. Welcome. Today is April 28th, 2024, and this is episode 275 of Lighthearted. My co-host again today is Jeff Gales, Executive Director of the U.S. Lighthouse Society. Hi, Jeff.
Hello again, Jeremy. Nice talking to you.
Last week, we listened to part one of an interview with Wayne Wheeler, founder of the U.S. Lighthouse Society, as well as his wife, Sally. People who heard it might have noticed that I didn't ask many questions. I didn't have to, because Wayne just took my first couple of questions and kind of ran with them. It was almost like a stream of consciousness as he was recounting the early days of the society. I really feel like this was something that was very important to get recorded.
Oh, I absolutely agree with you, Jeremy. Wayne was instrumental in starting the society and helping to begin the launch, the lighthouse preservation movement in this country. And the story of how he got started is really interesting and important to tell.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It goes back to my thinking that this podcast is not just a podcast. It's an oral history project recording people involved with lighthouses in the last few decades in this country, other countries too.
Yeah, I agree. You know, you're only able to talk to him for a relatively short amount of time. And there's a lot of information there. Wayne, luckily, has a great mind and is able to recall details from long ago. And who knows, this may be the first of a series that you do with Wayne, because he has so much information that we need to extract from him.
I have an idea. We could call it Wayne's World.
There you go.
I want to tell a story about recording this interview. We had been talking about doing an interview with Wayne all week. In fact, I know you suggested it, Jeff. I think one or two other people were also telling me that I had to interview Wayne while we had the opportunity. When I was leaving my room that day, the day we were planning to record it, I packed all my sound equipment in the case that I keep everything in. I was sure I included the little wallet that held the memory cards from my recorder. We all had dinner together that evening at a Thai restaurant. After dinner, I took Wayne and Sally to their hotel room. I opened up the case and set up the microphones, and then I went to look for the memory cards, and the little wallet with the memory cards was not there. I got very upset because I was so sure I had packed them. I did not have a single memory card with me, but luckily Sally and Wayne were very understanding, and I drove about 20 minutes to a Walmart. I got a couple of memory cards. So we started a little late, but everything was fine.
Well, Wayne and Sally are very gracious people, and I'm sure they were very understanding. They know that technical glitches happen. So, and they were comfortable. You had them in their hotel room. They were relaxing. It's no big deal. Don't beat yourself up, Jeremy.
Well, I'm not, because it got done anyway, but it was a little nerve-wracking there for a while. And I should probably give a special shout out to Walmart for being there and for selling those memory cards. Before we get to part two of the interview, I'm not sure we have to give Wayne's whole biography like we did last week. I'll just say that he is a former Coast Guard officer who founded the U.S. Lighthouse Society in San Francisco in 1984, and he is now the President Emeritus of the Society.
Well, keep in mind that Wayne actually was thinking about lighthouses well before he started the Society. You know, in his career in aids and navigation, he worked with them, he was dealing with them, and he and actually Bill Merlin, our treasurer, who was his boss at the time, saw a need. They saw these lighthouses deteriorating and access was being restricted. So he really kind of set the wheels in motion long before he founded the society while he was still in the Coast Guard.
We ended part one last week as Wayne was just starting to talk about the early days of the U.S. Lighthouse Society tours, and that's where we're picking it up today. So let's listen to the second part of my conversation with Wayne and Sally Wheeler now.
So I thought, well, probably Ireland, Australia.
We started in the U.S. first.
First I started in the U.S. They wanted tours, so I did a Maine tour.
Yeah.
And some others. I picked out the hotel, the boats if necessary, the food. I selected the food choices. I did the itinerary. I contacted the lighthouses that we were going to or other facilities. Yeah. I designed the patch, the luggage tag. I did everything. I made all the calls, put the whole thing together, did the tour, led the tour, loved it.
Yeah.
I was doing 4 and 5 domestic tours a year. Plus, I laid out the magazine by hand. I always did that. I did that for 20 years. I got the proofs, and I pasted it up, literally, and take the photographs and shrink them on the photocopier and crop them the way I want them and say I want a 2-point box around here and picked out the typeface I wanted. Loved doing that. Just loved it. Pushing it around by hands instead of this computer stuff. I like that hand stuff. And they wanted foreign tours. And somebody came to see me one day and he said, I'd like to do your tours. I said, well, I do the tours. I do everything. I don't need any help. But I need help with foreign tours. He goes, well, I'll come back in a week. And he came back and he said, how about Russia, 1992? I said, Russia? Oh, my God. That's the enemy, Russia. Russia. So, but we ended up going for it. A man came over from Russia. He was really into the anti-government people. He was doing echo stuff and peace and all that. And he put together a tour for us. So we did, I did only 28. My tours are usually 42. This is 28 people to Russia. They gave me a choice of the Gulf of Finland, the Black Sea, or the islands north of Japan. I took the Gulf of Finland so we could do St. Petersburg, the Hermitage. We went to the ballet one night, and all the lighthouses, of course. I always try to include museums, or in Italy we might go to a cheese factory, and olive oil and grease and that type of stuff. Yeah. So the foreign tours went crazy. We went Greece, Turkey, South Africa, a lot of Italian tours, French tours, all over the place. And the governments in these countries just rolled out the carpet for us. In Greece, the admiral had us in for cocktails and hors d'oeuvres one night. In Ireland, our first Ireland tour, our tour guide said, tell your people don't have a big lunch because they're going to have heavy poo-poos or heavy hors d'oeuvres. We're going to meet their directors at the Irish Lighthouse Board. So I told everybody, we went there. Beautiful, beautiful, huge office. Paintings of lighthouses and lightships. They had a bar they rolled out for us. And I'm looking around, there's only some peanuts and things. Nothing much there. And I had a plaque for them, and they had a book, a lighthouse book on Irish lighthouses for our library. And we said some nice words. And I'm thinking, wow, what's this all about? Pretty soon, these two big doors open, and here's a table covered in linen for about 45 people, sterling silver salt and pepper shakers that are shaped like lighthouses. And they had salmon and prime rib that was perfect. It was gorgeous. They had a dinner for all of us.
Yeah.
And I told the women, those sterling silver salt and peppers, leave your purses out here in the outer room, will you? Kidding, of course, you know. But it was just magical. And even in Russia, they were, of course, they were really poor at the time, so they bent over backwards for giving us anything we wanted. The vice admiral had us in into the Hermitage, or into the Admiralty. Yeah, we came into the Admiralty in St. Petersburg, and he got up there. He goes, "You are like Columbus. You are the first people to see a Russian lighthouse." Not even the Russian people see a Russian lighthouse. And I said some nice words to him. We had a plaque for him. And we went to these Russian lighthouses. The nice thing about them was they had gardens, so they could grow their own food, a lot of their own food. They had houses that were pre-communist, so they were, the wallpaper was faded, the floors, the linoleum floors were a little worn, but they were commodious houses. They lived very well there, except they couldn't get things like flour and meat and things like that. It was very difficult for them. But the each of the light stations had had a concrete, crude barracks building for 15 to 20 border guards in case the Americans decided to rush the country. But they were gone. So they used the kitchen there. The women from the four houses used the kitchen to make us lunch. And they took old bottles to put flowers in for the tables. Mm-hmm. And they took pieces of fabric to put on the windows to make it look like drapes. They were very, you know, quick and dirty drapes, believe me, quick and clean drapes, I should say. And they stayed in the kitchen, but they looked around the corner to see if we were all enjoying ourselves. And they made us a stew, a soup with fresh fish they'd caught from the Gulf of Finland that day. It was a fish stew and, of course, dill. Oh, the Russians love dill. So there's potatoes and onions and fish and a lot of dill. But it was just a very heartwarming feeling, you know. They were, and the little kids were hiding around, but when the bus pulled in, the kids are behind these bushes, and they came out, you know, the big wide-eyed kids. And we had little goodies for them. We had pencils and with our logo on it, of course. And I had our logo in a cookie cutter shape, and I gave it to the woman, one of the keeper's wives, and she, oh, she just thought that was great. But I have no flour. So I kind of blew it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I, oh my God, she had no flour.
Oh.
And I'm giving her a cookie cutter. But they were just so welcoming, just wonderful people. And the kids all said when we gave them things,
Spasiba.
Yeah, thank you, thank you. Mm-hmm. So the next year when we went back, they said thank you in English, and they weren't behind the bushes. They knew goodies were coming, so it was really great. Yeah. So the tours are really good. We made a lot of money on the tours, but I made enough money that I could give money to the light ship.
Yeah.
So our tour money kind of went to the light ship. I give them $20K. I gave them their own checking account, and I just pumped 20 or whatever into it.
Yeah.
So that was all good. So we, the whole thing was just magic, how it all came together, the light ship, the membership. We got up to around 7,500 members, did a lot of things. We put through the National Lighthouse Preservation Act of 2000.
Yeah.
That was a goodie. We've established our Lighthouse Museum on Staten Island. That was the other thing in my thing, was to establish a museum. And we did that on Staten Island. It's still got a ways to go, but it's getting there.
I was just going to say the tours today, you know, very much follow that template you set up. And what you were saying about experiencing local culture and everything, that's a big part of it today. So I've been involved in two international tours and several domestic ones, and I know that the way you described your tours are what we're aiming for today. So thank you for laying that foundation.
Well, thank you for continuing on. I appreciate that it continues. You mm-hmm. know?
Yeah.
And the thing is, I want the flavor of the country if we're doing a foreign tour. I want country food. I want Italian food. I don't want American food in Italy.
Right.
And it isn't just lighthouses. I want a museum, yeah. The flavor of the country. And that's what we did. Now, I have a story. We have one woman from the Midwest, and so we do the French tour. We go into Paris for 2 days, so we can do the Louvre, and we go out to Monet's.
Giverny's
place. So we can experience some of the culture of, and you have your days off in Paris, so you can have a dinner with a friend that's on the mm-hmm. tour with you in Paris. And this one woman from the Midwest, she was totally into lighthouses and stock car racing or something. Anyways, she goes, "What? Why are we in Paris? There are no lighthouses in Paris." She, you know, you see what I'm saying? She just tunnel vision into just lighthouses. But I want to experience the country too.
Sure, I agree with you. I mean, yeah, there's people who are not into the whole scene, but
yeah, and I've only had very few. It was so much fun, or I wouldn't have continued doing it.
Yeah.
Sally said, "I love to get on the bus and see how long it takes the people to coalesce." Well, about 5 minutes, they're talking and chatting. And if you've been there, and oh, I've been, you ever in that area, you come stay with us. It's amazing.
Yes. It still happens click. That way. Yeah, just, I know exactly what you're
it
saying.
It just clicks.
Yeah.
And that is so rewarding.
Yeah.
I've only had a few problem children, and they're mostly women on foreign tours. And there's only two or three, but I mean,
yeah.
One was apparently a klepto, a very rich woman. And we were in the, actually, it was the first Russian tour. And it was very poor. We were in this hotel that was built in the 60s, and it used to have businesses in it. And it was where they trained athletes for the Olympics. So we were assigned rooms that had these little tiny beds and little desks and things.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the lower part of the building was abandoned, and we ate there a lot, and it was chicken dinner every night.
Oh, tell about when you were waiting for the taxi after the airport.
Oh, when we got there. Oh, yeah, this is funny. In a minute. I said to our I had a person from this agency. This new agency, wonderful, beautiful young lady who could speak great English. And she had a sidekick, Olga, who couldn't speak English, mm-hmm. and two young men from the university, which both later years had been to our house in San Francisco, which is amazing. Anyways, I said, I want to go to a Russian restaurant or maybe a old Russian place where you have a leg of turkey you gnaw off, or a gypsy place, or a real Russian restaurant, not this American chicken poorly done. So they took us to this restaurant, which looked like Las Vegas 1952. Long room, women on the stage with no tops, and chandeliers. It was better than where we were, but it wasn't. I wanted that ethnic thing, which wasn't that. Anyways, the next day, my two university kids came up to see me. Wayne, we have to tell you this. We weren't going to tell you. We got to tell you. This one woman got caught at the door trying to steal a cup and saucer and a half a bottle of vodka. And she got caught by the guards, and they smoothed it over, and they got it taken care of. Whoa, I just went right through the overhead. And the next year, Cookie, or whatever her name was, from Chicago, very wealthy person. The first one was very wealthy, too. She tried to take the towel from the room. We were outside having lunch just before we left, and the maid came out and said, "We're missing a towel from your room, sir." And then she tried to take caviar. At that time, you couldn't take caviar out of the country.
Yeah.
And she got caught at the airport.
Wow. What did she have the caviar in? Just like a can or something?
It was just in the can or luggage. Yeah, okay. They just checked through her luggage.
I think they were trying to get out in her pocket.
Yeah. But the first time we went to Russia, we flew into Thailand, Finland.
Mm-hmm.
And from Finland, we flew into Russia. And we landed in the old airport. And as you landed, you looked down. This is the first time we're in Russia. And you looked down the runways. And the runways, there are weeds in the runways. And there are machines that are just rusting, plows and cranes. And we get into the building, which is a great big square building with paintings on the ceiling of planes flying over with the Russian insignia on it. And you go through some kind of cardboard barriers, and they throw your luggage in through a hole in the wall to a big heap. And you pull your luggage out, and we go down to the checkout, and there are all these signs, Acme Group, Blah Blah Group, this group, nothing for the Lighthouse Society. And pretty soon the whole place is deserted. Mm-hmm. So we go up to the front and of the building, and everybody's looking at me, what are we going to do? And I said, I'll take care of this. So I went over, I had a phone number. So I went over to a guard, and I got his permission to use the phone in an office. And I went in there, and they called St. Petersburg. No answer. I called Moscow. No answer. I went back out. I said, oh, no, first, before I went in there, I said, what coin do I put in this phone out, just on the outside of the building? Coin, that coin no good anymore, but doesn't matter, phone doesn't work. So then I went through the thing, we're calling with no answer, and I came out, and these cabs are circling, and they want to pick us up. And finally, everybody's looking at me, of course, and I said, okay. So I got this cab up. He goes, okay, we put all your two people in cab, and we put all your luggage in the van and take it. I said, no, the luggage goes with the people in the cab. So they wanted $15, which is like 5 months' pay. Mm-hmm. Officers and then Russian Navy at the time got $2 a month. Seamen got $1 a month. So I didn't know that at the time, but I got them down to $5. And now we've been flying 14 hours, some of us, overnight. Pretty blurry. And we went into St. Petersburg. We pulled up to this hotel. Oh, I had a hotel name on a piece of paper. I gave it to the driver. Oh, I know. So we got up to the hotel, and the cabs pulled up. And Ted Schutz got out of the cab in front of me. I got on mine. He goes, Wayne, what if this isn't the right hotel? I said, Ted, if this isn't the right hotel, we are deep kimchi. And so I went into the hotel. They couldn't speak English. I can't speak Russian. I gave them a list of names, and they sent a sheet over to me, which had our names and the keys. I gave the keys out. I said, go to your room. I'll call you when I figure this out. And pretty soon, my people came, the Russian people came, mm-hmm. and it wasn't their fault. It was America. The guy gave them the wrong time when we would be there. They had already been to the airport after we were left.
Uh-huh.
So, and they really did a good job. All kinds of stuff. I could tell stories for hours on foreign tours.
Yeah.
Fun stuff, not so fun stuff, and so on.
Yeah.
But that's tours. Anyways, the whole thing, it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed. I couldn't wait to go to the office. My wife resumed her floral business, floral design. She did weddings and corporate accounts and so on. And if she was working weekends doing a wedding, I didn't have anything to do. Kid was out, and so I went to the office. Mm-hmm. It was fun. The mail. I couldn't wait to open the mail in the office. We had so many people just donating off-the-cuff money. We never had a money problem. If we needed new computers, except I kept mine 20 years, but if we needed new computers, I got them for everybody.
Yeah. Maybe we can move on to, you were in San Francisco until when with the society?
We were in San Francisco. We moved in 2005.
Yeah.
2005.
So you were in San Francisco for a little over 20 years. You were in how many different places in San Francisco? Just the two?
Well, we were in our house for 2.5 right. years, Joe. We were about 2 years on Chenery Street.
Yeah.
And in a mom-pop grocery store. And then we went to the financial district in the fifth floor. In fact, they had half of the second floor for a while mm-hmm. while we were selling books and things like that. I gave that up. We were there until I retired. Jeff took over, and about a year later, he moved to Hansville.
Yeah.
So that was maybe 2006, somewhere around there.
Yeah, yeah.
2006.
Yeah. So you ran the show for those first more than 20 years.
22 years.
22 years.
Not counting the year or so that took to get it going.
Yeah. Did you have any paid staff in those years?
Oh, yeah. As soon as I got the mom-pop grocery store, I hired a woman. A guy down the street had a business from his home, mm-hmm. and he contacted me. He wasn't even a member. I don't know how he contacted me, but he recommended this woman, Tanya, and I hired her. I hired her part-time for a certain amount of hours. She worked beyond those hours. She mm-hmm. got so into it. So she was there, and I'm going to the Coast Guard still for quite a while. And then I left the Coast Guard, and then I came in there full-time. When we went downtown, Tanya came with us. She was so good. She corrected me on a lot of things. And I would get going so fast. I'd be laying out the magazine. I'd be trying to do a tour. I'd be doing this, that. She goes, it's like you got the devil chasing you. Slow down. I've got one speed. Fast. She was so good.
And she was the right person at the beginning.
She really was.
She was very, very bright and very creative. And so we were inventing systems, and she was part of that.
Yeah,
she really was. So she came downtown with us. She didn't like being downtown. I insisted I wore a coat and tie.
She was an old hippie.
Yeah, and so she wore a dress and stuff, and I don't think she was really comfortable with that, but she was so good. She was good with people. Anyways, Tanya was a wonderful person. And then she left, and I hired... we had a lot of people there. Within no time, though, I had three employees in there. I had assistant doing certain things. I had somebody doing membership things and somebody at the desk. We had a man on the light ship who had been stationed on that light ship as a young sailor.
Mm-hmm.
And he really got into it, and he'd retired from his job. He put together every month a folder with how much water was on the ship, how much fuel, and everybody that worked, their initials, what they were working on, and how many hours they spent. And when you compile that, it's good for grants.
Mm-hmm.
All that information, every single month for 20 years,
mm-hmm.
we had these folders in the office on the light ship. And we eventually paid him something like $20,000 a year, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I had him, two to three people beside me in the office.
Yeah.
It all worked out pretty well.
What about volunteers?
I'm lousy at getting volunteers, apparently. A couple of people would come in spite of me. That's what's so good about Jeff. He is magical at getting quality volunteers that even relocate
yes.
hundreds of miles, thousands of miles away.
That's right.
That's a weak point. Sally kept telling me over the years, delegate. And I just like doing everything. I was even doing the books for many, many years. He was a CPA on the board. He taught me to do this very simple program. So I entered all the checks. I did everything. I set up all the filing cabinets.
Mm-hmm.
When I left, about five or six four-drawer filing cabinets with files in them. I did them all color-coordinated. The California was yellow. The Great Lakes are all blue. And I did the lakes by lake instead of state. And then after I left, they turned it back to state, which is ridiculous because it's so much easier when you know it's the lake. Because there are several lighthouses that have the same name, like Eagle Island. There are three Eagle Islands that I know of.
There's Eagle Harbor and Eagle River, just to confuse things.
Yeah. I did everything, and I just couldn't delegate, which was a weakness, really.
I know what that's like, though, so
yeah.
I understand, yeah. So you were the director,
I was the head poobah.
You were the head, what is it, the chief cook and bottle washer?
Exactly.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Until you hired Jeff as the director. So he was the first.
Well, at the end, I didn't know this until about maybe 10 years or more after I left that I had burned out. I didn't even know it. I didn't even think about that. But I knew that I was going in. I go into work, and I couldn't move. Hmm. I'd sit at the desk, and I know I had to go out and lay out the magazine. And it became a real... It was like I was, in mud, walking out into the other room to lay out the magazine. And I would just sit there, and I'm used to typing letters and doing this and setting up a tour, and I couldn't do it. And so Jeff had come in to see, call me, and he said, "Can I come in and see you and ask about lighthouse lenses?" I said, "Sure, of course." He showed up on time with a coat and tie. I was impressed, and I lectured. I hate that word. I talked to him for about an hour and a half. I gave him a whole bunch of material to take home and read. And he called me about 2 weeks later or a month later, and he wanted to know about fog signals. So he came in on time, dressed nicely, and I told him about fog signals. And so I had him in the back of my mind when I'm thinking, I've got to find somebody to take this over. I just can't do it anymore. Not that I didn't want to, I just physically couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. And so I asked him, and he came in for an interview, stayed with us. He and his wife stayed overnight with us. And
what do you think of what's happening these days with the society? Of course, we just spent a week of had a week of meetings with the board, and
well, they're going ahead. They're doing a lot of things way beyond what I did, no doubt about that. The thing is, when I started the society, lighthouses were hot.
Yeah,
you couldn't pick up a catalog for rugs or plumbing supplies without a lighthouse nozzle for your garden or whatever.
Yeah,
every catalog had it.
There was a wave in the 80s, no doubt about it.
Oh, it was huge. It was huge. We just hit it accidentally right. Also, when I tell people in my talks, it wasn't just our society. The Great Lakes Lighthouse Keepers Association had been started a year before me. And their local ones starting up down in Key West and Rhode Island. And Bill Davis in Rochester, New York, completely redid the lighthouse almost totally by himself. We're talking ripping vines off the tower and the house himself.
Yeah.
Opening up the windows that had been blocked in with cinder block on the tower.
Yeah.
All over the country, it was like a... And then not only that, but some states and counties were recognizing the importance of not only lighthouses, though, but it was also preservation of train stations.
That's true. It coincided with more of a awareness of historic preservation in general.
From the Historic Preservation Act of 1966, it just blew out from there.
Yeah, we had that period of urban renewal with a lot of history being destroyed.
Yeah, after World War II and after the Korean War, it was plastic. Tear down the brick buildings, put up new stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And the 80s was also a good time for lighthouse books, and that was kind of a new thing. There weren't many lighthouse history books before then.
Over the years, when I started the society, I started looking for books from book dealers, and also looking for magazine articles, and also artwork, like things that were in... the 19th century magazine, what I'm thinking.
Harper's.
Harper's and the others.
Frank Leslie's Illustrated. Yeah, Leslie's. Those kinds. I think Ballou's was another one.
It's kind of like every 20 years, there were some 30s, there were some in the teens, there were some in the 90s, 1880s or 90s, and it was just about every 10 or 20 years.
Yeah.
And you see the books that were there. And then in the 50s and in the 80s, so there was kind of a wave type of thing of these books going on. And of course, 80% of the books are filled with fodder stuff. It's just not good stuff. And it regurgitates itself, ghost stories. Every lighthouse has a ghost.
I'm going to ask you about something that you've mentioned to me this week that I knew nothing about, acting. What is your acting background?
Well, I acted in grade school, high school,
yeah,
and college. I got an award in college for acting. And when I was in the Coast Guard in Washington, I was stationed in Washington. I lived in Maryland. I was in the Maryland, I lived in Crofton, and I was in the community players there in okay. Crofton. I had one play, I had two parts in it. Can't hear you, the water's running. I was a...
Was that the name of the play?
Yeah. fun play. It had four sections to it. And I was a mattress salesman in one, and I was an old curmudgeon in a rocking chair with an old lady next to me, and we were our minds were skipping around. She'd say something, "No, that's not... No, that's not that. I never wore a pongee suit." And one time I completely skipped about 18 lines, and she picked up on where I should be and got us back where we were.
Wow.
She was so
that's
good.
Skill. Yeah.
She was so good, but the lines didn't make sense.
Right.
You know, out there. And then when I got to Asheville, I was in the community player. It was called the...
Asheville Community.
It was called...
Well, there's ACT, and then part of that
was
the Autumn Players.
The Autumn Players, because we're in the autumn years of our life.
Okay.
Ooh. And because most of them...
Readers theaters.
Yeah, so we read...
So this is now. Are you still doing this?
I quit a few years ago. I didn't like the plays. They were doing these old Saw plays from the 30s and 40s.
Mm-hmm.
Noel Coward and all these. They were the original sitcoms. I hate sitcoms. I teach a 16-hour course up to in the history of lighthouses.
Yep.
In one half day, I commit. I have a uniform made by a company in Pennsylvania that makes them for the National Park Service and museums.
Mm-hmm.
And it's exact uniform. Except I had them, instead of using the old wool kersey, which is itchy and doesn't hold a crease and all that stuff, I had a wool blend.
Mm-hmm.
And I had, I guess that's the only thing I made. I wish I had thought about the fly, because there's a button fly, which is real. And when I got it, he said, "Check it over and see if it fits and see if you think it's correct."
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at it, and in the sleeve, there's kind of a tan-colored material in the sleeve, and it's stamped inside the right sleeve. It's stamped, approved, Quartermaster Corps, Army mm-hmm. Quartermaster Corps. And I called him. I said, "What the hell is stamped inside the sleeve?" And he goes, "Well, all uniforms, no matter what service, we had to be approved by the Army Quartermaster Corps until about 1920 or something." I said, "Who the hell is going to look inside my right sleeve?" But it has. I had the buttons made in Connecticut, and I had the K, the gold parts, made in Pakistan, and I got material from a company in Chicago, and they would send me the material, and I would. You know, some other place would send me the material, and I would send it to a hat company in Chicago, along with the buttons that I had made from Connecticut,
mm-hmm.
and they would make me so many hats. So we sold those hats, but I had this uniform, and I dress in the uniform, and I come in, I wait, I have somebody take care of the class, because till at the beginning they all come in, and she takes attendance and stuff,
yep.
And then I come in. I'm Harley Keyes. I was a lighthouse keeper in my day. I was born in 1860. I never knew my father. He was, he joined the war. And it's a good half hour talk, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. You know, when I first met you was August 1989.
Oh.
The Lighthouse Bicentennial year. In Newport, Rhode Island.
Oh my God, I checked into a hospital.
Yeah, and you were in the uniform.
So you know the uniform.
Yeah. I was. Yeah. I don't remember wearing
you,
the uniform.
Yeah,
there.
You were at the armory in Newport. There was some. Mm-hmm. There was an exhibit set up, and you were greeting people. And
I don't remember wearing a uniform.
Sadly,
there.
That I don't need to remind you that whole event was cut short by like yes. a hurricane going by offshore.
I guarantee they were doing a lighthouse play on Ida Lewis or something, and I guaranteed a gate for Friday, two Saturdays, and a matinee on Sunday. I rented the armory.
Mm-hmm.
I kept the tents up from the yacht club show for $1,500, $15,000. Mm-hmm. I had all these debts.
Yeah.
And the hurricane was going to hit, and of course it didn't hit. But they said you could have slept. They had 80% cancellation of all eastern Connecticut, all of Rhode Island, and part of Massachusetts, and B&Bs, hotels, everything, motels. There's just nobody around. And I started drinking a lot. I had a lot of heart palpitations. I checked myself into a hospital. I thought we were going to die. And Charlotte Johnson, God bless Charlotte Johnson, she got the city to waive the armory cost, including the phone bill. They gave me an office upstairs, including the phone bill, the office.
Mm-hmm.
She got the $15,000 knocked down to $8,000, I think, something like that. She went around to merchants and helped lay off a lot of this. And the only time I ever did this, I sent a Hugo Relief Fund letter out to people, saying that donate anything at all, $5, whatever, told them what happened, and that helped pay it off. Some people sent $100, some people $5.
Yeah.
So I got that. I don't like asking for money, especially. I
remember it like it was yesterday.
Really?
Yeah.
Where did you meet me? Oh, in the armory.
With my wife. Yeah. I think you were there. I think you might have been right there. Yeah. So we chatted a little bit, and what there was of that event was good. It's just I was really looking forward to it. It was supposed to be a cruise, I believe.
Oh, we had a cruise too. I had bus tours.
Yeah.
Oh God, we had a keeper's dinner, and oh man. Yeah.
Well, I didn't mean to remind you of all that.
Oh, it's okay.
You talk about the uniform, and it brought that to mind because you were in your uniform that day. I have a question for you. Did anybody ever tell you you look like General George Meade? Have you heard that before?
No, but my great great uncle was Grant.
The picture of General George Meade you see all the time. He's turned a little bit to the side. He's in his Civil War uniform.
Yeah.
I swear it looks like you. I think of you every time I see that picture.
Yeah. I used to have a mole right here, and I had it removed. And Grant has one right there, too.
Yeah.
You know, and the eyebrows and stuff.
Yeah. But Meade, I think
you... Meade. I'll have to look at Meade's picture. I use one in the magazine when I talk about...
I think that's the picture I'm thinking of. But
he also looks a lot like a lot of Greek... heads.
Mm-hmm.
Greek sculptures.
Yeah, I can see that.
You know, those strong features.
Yeah, absolutely. I can definitely see that. I'm going to ask you a really silly question, but I have two... This is my next to last question. I have two final questions for you for bonus points. First, the silly question is, what's your favorite lighthouse?
That's a silly question. my favorite lighthouse is the Cordouan in France. That lighthouse, which has a chapel in it, stained glass windows, very historic. And as a matter of fact, the French have something like we have, which is the National Register. And the Cordouan Lighthouse is number one in their register. So it has a lot of history. It had the first Fresnel lens was in there.
Yep.
It has the First Order now in there. It has... the original was built up later, much taller tower, and has absolutely gorgeous keeper's bedroom for the men on duty at the top, all done in walnut and stuff. The size of it, the location, the architecture, it's just the best.
Yeah.
Most of them are like grandchildren. All are a little different and all charming in different ways.
Sure. That's a really good and interesting choice. Fortunately, I haven't seen it in person, but from what I know about it, I completely understand. Yeah. My last question, okay, for extra bonus points. What has been your favorite thing about your 40 years of association with the United States Lighthouse Society?
I have to say the people. Mm-hmm. They're just incredible. On the tours, the people on the tours, if something goes wrong, and a lot of our tours are first-time tours, mm-hmm. and they're not cookie-cutter tours. They're tours that we've never done before. And we're even taking the coaches we take of sometimes, like in Ireland, have never been down these roads before. So we never know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter because they put up with it. We have very, very few complainers on our tours. Everybody gets along with whatever's happening, and they get along with each other.
Yeah.
And they're very supportive of the society, of course.
Yeah. Sally, you have anything to add about...
Well, I was just thinking that generally the Lighthouse Society members as a group are highly intelligent and good-humored. There's a lot of bird watchers there.
Oh, that's true.
Yes,
and
that's
a lot
true.
Of educators. And I just think, as a group, they're superb. They make me feel good about humanity.
That's beautiful. Yeah, and very true. And I agree about Lighthouse people in general, but especially the USLHS, of course.
And they are bird watchers, too.
It's true. Oh, there's a big right. crossover there. That's absolutely true. And that's one of the bonuses of lighthouses, of going to see lighthouses, that the wildlife is a part of the experience.
And yeah. going into a nice area, too.
Yeah, usually. The natural environment, the scenery, yeah. it's all part of the appeal. For sure. So, Wayne and Sally, what a pleasure this is. It's great seeing you again this week.
Well, thank you. It's good talking with you, too.
Yeah, and I'm so happy we were able to do this tonight. There were a couple of little glitches, but we got it together. And
eventually.
Yeah.
We've been trying to do this for days.
Yes, yes. But I'm so glad we did this, and thank you so much for allowing me into your home for the week here.
Pleasure, yeah. really,
so
really.
It's a real, real pleasure. And thank you for everything you've done for lighthouses in this country.
Well, thank you.
Well, it took about 5 years of this podcast to get the chance to interview Wayne Wheeler, but I'm glad it worked out.
Me too. Thanks so much, Jeremy, for taking the time to do it. And I'm sure Wayne and Sally do appreciate your efforts here.
Well, you played a big role in it, too. It was an idea whose time had come. Speaking of U.S. Lighthouse Society tours, I want to remind everyone to go to uslhs.org to read about everything the Society offers, including domestic and international tours. This October, I will be co-leading a tour for about a week in New Hampshire and southern Maine, and there's still room to sign up for that one.
Great. Yeah, that's going to be a great tour. And we're doing other things as well now. We're just about to give out our 2024 grants to six different lighthouse organizations following their restoration projects. We're continually updating the Candace Clifford research catalog on the website, receiving collections of material. We recently donated a huge archive of books and lighthouse historical documents from a library in Northern California. We're going to continue to digitize and scan items. We've actually set up an entire scanning system at our headquarters here so we can start scanning historic documents and books and photos and things more effectively to make them available for people online. So we're doing a lot of stuff here at the Lighthouse Society in addition to the fun stuff like tours and passports and what have you. It's not all fun and games here at the Society. Sometimes you actually got to work.
Well, it's all part of the mission. And I'll just add to what you were just saying that I've been gradually scanning my own collection, which dates back about 40 years now, mostly New England stuff, but other stuff too. So scanning everything, getting everything digitized and getting it into the U.S. Lighthouse Society digital archives. And then some of it goes into the public research catalog as well. And I just want to mention that if anybody out there has, whether it's photos of lighthouse keepers, if there's a lighthouse keeper in their family or anything like that, if they have stories of lighthouse keepers, we'd love to hear about it. Anything, and this goes for lighthouse organizations as well. If you'd like to share your historical research materials with the USLHS and have us put it in our archives and make some of it available to the public, please contact us because we're always welcoming people to do that.
Absolutely. That's how our archive has been created, is through not only searching things out and getting them, but also by people donating, organizations donating. And our goal is to share this information, not to profit by it. Our goal is to be really a one-stop shopping for when not the only resource, but maybe the first resource that you might go to learn about the subject and then learn from there where to go from here. So it's a giant project. And I don't know, Jeremy, you know, we have so much information that we've already have digitized in our archive. Only a small percentage has now made it onto our website. It's going to be an ongoing project. So not only is it important to gather the information, we also need to raise money in order to bring in the extra help we need to get that information transferred so it becomes available to the public. That's another aspect of this. And to help support our Lighthouse Preservation Fund, which is the account that supports our grants, our Lighthouse mm-hmm. grants. So there's different ways people can help in addition to giving us historic material to provide to put on our website. There's many ways people can get involved with the society and help us.
Yeah, it's all part of the mission. I just want to give a shout out to our friend Ralph Krugler, who for the last couple of years has been the person doing the most of that, what I call migrating from the digital archives to the public online research catalog. So, but as you said, it's a never-ending process for sure. It's never going to be finished, that's for sure.
It's a labor of love, but it takes a lot of time and it takes resources to make it happen. So we want to be that organization that people are able to go to for the information, and somehow we got to get there.
Yep. So before we close things down for today, I want to read a quote from a 1993 article in the magazine of Syracuse University, Wayne Wheeler's alma mater. Quote, "The life of Wayne Wheeler and the United States Lighthouse Society is anything but quiet. Preserving a bit of our nautical history, however, is worth the effort. To keep the lights shining, to keep the beautiful structures on our shores, to keep the foghorns sounding in the bay, to keep the lore alive," unquote. Thanks again to Wayne and Sally Wheeler for the interview. It was a blast. We'll be back next week with an interview about the Maine Maritime Museum. Until then, to all our regular listeners and our new ones, thanks so much for listening, and
keep a good light.
Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine.